Well, hello there. Welcome to Just to Be Nominated, a podcast about movies that is distributed by Lee Enterprises. The show is hosted by me, Chris Lay, the podcast operations manager for Lee, along with Bruce Miller, the editor of the Sioux City Journal, and Jared McNett, a reporter for the Globe Gazette in Mason City, Iowa. Last time you heard from us, we celebrated Memorial Day with a rundown of some of our favorite summer blockbusters. For this episode, we decided to explore HBO Max, the brand new subscription streaming service from HBO that offers way more than the usual fare from home box office. We'll put some links in the show notes to where you can stream all of these as of the day that the episode drops, so click on through to find those there. Anyway, here is the show.
I finished something over the weekend, and there's just, I can't even remember what shows I've been watching because I'm tired of everything. I want to go back in a theater. I'm tired of sitting at home and watching it on my own TV.
I agree. 110%.
I did see The King of Staten Island and I loved it.
Really?
I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was really good. Yeah. It was one that I thought if it were in theaters, it would do really well.
Now, Bruce, you've repeatedly said a number of times already that you want like a that all movies are too long. Was King of Staten Island also too long, considering it was an Apatow movie?
Can I tell you, I saw Artemis Fowl. It was 90-some minutes, and that is the longest 90 minutes I've ever seen. But The King of Staten Island was 2 hours and something, and it seemed like it was 80 minutes. It was really, yeah. So I am not a big fan of movies that somehow make you feel like it's torture. And if you feel like you have to go to the bathroom, that's always a key rule. If you feel like you have to go to the bathroom during the movie, it's not keeping your interest.
I mean, that also could just be your bladder, you know, pressing in onto your brain. But
my bladder lasted through The Irishman, and I did not have to go to the bathroom in the middle of that. It was because I liked the movie. I think that's part of it. If I hate the movie, then I'm looking for a reason to get out.
I watched The Irishman at a place that had beers. So I definitely...
You went several times.
Yeah. At least, I think twice maybe. I think I dipped out for that.
Yeah. It's all, if you have more intake than you need, it could be a problem.
When I went and saw The Irishman with a friend of mine who was a notoriously sleepy individual... He had to bring like 2 energy drinks with him just to ensure that he like did not at all doze off at any point during The Irishman.
You know, what are we going to be like when we do get back to a theater and there are like kind of rules?
Yeah.
Because now you just pause anything, you go get something out of the refrigerator, you come back. It's going to be weird.
I know the last time we talked, Bruce, you were real optimistic and I'm taking a much more pessimistic a stance. Or outlook, I suppose, on theaters opening back up. And I think the trend in positive cases that have been coming back since Memorial Day openings. We've got what Tenet got pushed back, Wonder Woman got pushed back, bunch of other stuff is, you know, getting pushed back even further. And I feel like we're gonna be out of theaters for a lot longer. And when we do go in, it's going to be really weird. And it's, you know, I mean, if you're in a theater and somebody coughs, even if there are 2 chairs between you and everybody else in all directions, you know, put a 10 foot radius between everybody. And, you know, it still is just, it's not going to be relaxing. It's not going to take you out of, I mean, the whole pleasure of going to a theater is being fully immersed in it and being taken out of reality, and you're just not going to be able to escape that.
Think of the branding possibilities, though, for masks and hazmat suits and all that kind of stuff. It could be good.
It could be. I saw, what was it? There's what some company was selling masks that just have the logo of the film The Mask.
Nice.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a little on the nose, but... I mean, that movie wasn't exactly known for its subtlety, so
no.
I suppose it works out. Did you guys see the new Spike Lee on Netflix yet?
No.
Da 5 Bloods.
Did you like it?
I did. I'm a little bit iffy on Spike Lee to a point. He's someone who is, you know, like, you know what you're getting when you watch a Spike Lee joint. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, the moralizing in it and the way that he kind of, you know, uses these elements of actual history, to the way that they're just kind of shoehorned in there. I don't know. It's, there's a lot to like about the movie, and I definitely need to watch it again. But there's something about it where I just, I don't, like, I mean, like the ending of Black Klansman with all the, you know, the footage of Charlottesville and Trump. And I mean, there's, I mean, speaking of no real subtlety, I mean, he really just leans into all that, and there's parts of it that I just don't really know. It feels very, very, very much in the present moment, which is good. And I'm
right.
I'll be interested to see how it ages, I suppose. But yeah, all the performances in there are incredible. Everything in Vietnam is amazing. I really loved it. I don't know. It feels ridiculous to be, you know, to watch a Spike Lee movie and think, oh, he should really tone it down a little bit, because that's not what he does.
No, yeah.
But yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I still need to watch that. It's on my list. The only thing I watched this weekend was the new Chappelle special. It's Netflix, but it's only on YouTube right now, I think.
Yeah.
8:46, and that's definitely not a comfort watch by any means, but he has always been very good at, like, you know, capturing and, like, summarizing things. So it was very, like, kind of helpful to have him doing a special that's basically just talking about everything that's been going on the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
And there's such, like, a logicalness to his writing and how his jokes or, you know, observations kind of unfold that you know what's coming sometimes, but he also just has this potency to, like, his construction of, like, jokes and thoughts and whatnot that you still get knocked over when the punchline actually does land. And that happens, like, throughout 8:46, even though it's only, like, 26 minutes.
Yeah. I think the Dave Chappelle thing, I agree. It was really good. It was really potent. But I mean, all three of us, I'm sure, have been digesting a lot of news, a lot of opinions, a lot of, yeah, you know, Twitter hot takes. And so to watch that and to still, you know, see someone who's able to put such an interesting, unique spin and repackage, you know, very specific events of the past few years, and capture the emotions that him as an African American, and also someone who has been, you know, trumpeting this stuff for a very long time. And that's, you know, one of the things in the special where he talks about, he's just like, people are, you know, haven't asking me to come and talk about stuff. And it's like, I've been talking about this, like, go back and watch however many, you know, sketches from the Chappelle show. And it's like, I'm just going to say the exact same thing.
He literally has a joke from his special from 2000 about the cops killing someone and then sprinkling some crack on them and then leaving. Like, it's literally a joke. From 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His cynicism has been validated many times over. So what else did you see? You watched Artemis Fowl, Bruce. Anything else you catch up on this weekend?
Well, I've been trying to watch a bunch of series. I've been trying to pick them off one by one, so I'm done with them. You know what I found, though? I don't know how I lapsed onto it, but it's a Canadian comedy series, because I'm looking for comedies. I'm tired of all this drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened upon a thing, and it's old, so just know, it's called Kim Convenience.
Oh, yeah, on Netflix.
Have you seen Kim Convenience?
I have not seen it. I've heard really good things about it. Jared, have you seen it?
No, I have not, but Canadians know funny, so I'm interested.
Well, it's about a Korean convenience store in, I think, Toronto. It's somewhere in Canada. And it's just a fun little dynamic between family members and how some are stuck in the past and some are in the future. And the guy who is the son is going to be the next big Marvel Comics guy. And you would know the character's name. I don't know what it is, but he's been cast as this Asian superhero.
What he's going to be in the Eternals? Is that the one? Or
you know how much I care about that stuff. So you'd have to fill me in on that, which one is going to be, because frankly, the Marvel universe is done as far as I'm concerned right now. I don't want to have to try and start one that's going to take me 20 years to finish, to figure out what's going on with everything. So if I get involved with the next ones, it might be a one-off and that's it.
Sure.
But anyway, he's the star of that. It's a cute little show. And it's one of those things I am looking every night for something that I can leave before I go to bed on a happy note. I've had way too many sad notes. And I'm tired of the late night talk show hosts picking up on politics or whatever. I just need to laugh. And maybe that's why I'm looking at these streaming services, because I figure there's got to be something there that's going to make me laugh. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I've watched Caddyshack so many times on cable. I think I can do every line from it. And National Lampoon's Vacation, all three of them. So just know I'm looking for the funny, and that's where I'm finding it.
Admittedly, there are not a lot of chuckles on the kind of rough list that I put together for this exercise. So hopefully, Bruce, you brought some of the chuckles with some of your picks.
Are we going into my big HBO Max?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I did not look at the movies. So I'll be honest with you guys. I looked at the series. So okay. I can tell you anything you want to know about the series, but I did not look at the movies because basically it's the Warner Brothers catalog. And I think I've seen most of those.
Yeah, it's interesting. HBO Max, I mean, it's everything on HBO. So it's all the HBO series. It is, you know, whatever, I guess, they have access to. Like, it's whatever HBO Now or HBO Go was, but it's, in addition to that, are selections from, I think, what, TCM and the Warner Archives, and there's a whole bunch of Criterion releases in there as well.
Yep. Also, Studio Ghibli has stuff on there, too.
Yeah, which I think this is the first streaming service to get all the Studio Ghibli stuff, correct?
Probably so. To get all of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, to have just like a complete overall. Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff in there. Oh, and also the whole bunch of Adult Swim content as well.
What do you think about them pulling Gone with the Wind?
I think that it is, kind of an empty gesture, I guess. I mean, like, it's, I'm more concerned about the people that, you know, reacted in a, oh, they're censoring history. And it's like, they're not. I mean, of all the movies that could ever be, you know, disappeared. Gone with the Wind is not gonna disappear.
No.
Well, and really it shouldn't disappear, largely because it had the first black supporting actress winner in it. And would you want to just kind of say that didn't happen? Now, she was playing a stereotypical character, but she did it damn well.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see that disappear because of that. You know, so many of these things are of their time, and I agree it's a great thing to put a disclaimer at the front and talk about that. But again, it gets back to my whole concept of don't mess with what the original film was. I told you that before about the Star Wars films. I don't like him monkeying around with the first Star Wars and adding in a bunch of laser beams and stuff like that, because I think it should be seen in a historic context. Here's what it looked like back in 1977. Here's what Gone with the Wind looked like in 1939. I don't want them cutting bits out, but they can certainly add a disclaimer on the front and talk about what they're saying, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Yeah, no, exactly, Chris, because you called it like an empty gesture or whatever, and that's definitely what it feels like when it's a movie that is like that much of a cornerstone. Like, just pulling it, that doesn't really do anything, and it's kind of like pointless, because it's not like that movie just suddenly gets erased from like the consciousness or whatever.
Yeah.
So pulling it from your...
It's on that TNT or TBS all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't register for me as something worth me investing emotional energy in, like on either side, on the, like their right to add the disclaimer. I mean, it seems like it just jumped into the social media churn of film Twitter. And I saw a lot of, you know, people just kind of saying things where I'm like, well, that's all of this is kind of obvious. And it's also a week from now, no one's going to be talking about this. They're going to be talking about something else. The movie should still be out there. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I would love to see more ways for people to be adding context to anything, you know, where you're, you know, like, I want, it's one of the nice things about, we talked about Criterion films being on HBO Max. I also have a subscription to the Criterion channel, which one of the really nice things about that is that you can actually put on the commentaries
right.
for the films that are on there. And I would love to hear more examples of those kinds of things where you could watch, you know, Gone with the Wind, and there would be not like a pop-up video thing, but if you wanted to, you could in the movie, you know, click through and see, you know, historically accurate, you know, information about the book itself that it was based on, the, you know, people that were maybe protesting the film or the book at the beginning, or, you know, go back and, you know, I feel like that almost kind of undercuts the enjoyment of just watching films. And I, you know, wouldn't necessarily want that to happen to everything, I suppose. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, there are opportunities there to start a conversation, and it seems like that kind of happened. But on the other hand, I was listening to the podcast, and they were like, oh, a bunch of, you know, Republicans are now watching a 4-hour movie to own the libs. And that seems like it's, you know, the best, like the best outcome, I guess, is, you know, a bunch of people are watching this movie just for the sake of watching it. And that's fine by me. I don't. Yeah. So well, go
and
for
it. Apparently, literally this morning, there's news that whenever it does get put back on HBO Max, because, of course, it'll go back at some point. This, I'm reading this from Cinema Blend. It says it will include a new introduction from Turner Classic Movies with, like, you know, like more historical context and analysis and stuff like that. So,
like, adjusted for inflation, it is still head and shoulders like the most profitable film in the history of Hollywood. And I'm not the person who's going to say that we need to excise it from, you know, history or whatever. I mean, it is a very specific artifact, but again, you need some kind of a context to it. So I'd
a real HBO Max thing would be to have the cast of Friends discuss it.
Or have the Game of Thrones guys come in and remake it.
Yeah, they're probably still under contract.
What was that? There was that the Confederate show that they were going to be doing that got shut down real fast because that was a terrible idea.
Would you guys subscribe to HBO Max? Is this something that interests you?
I'm a subscriber to HBO Now, and so I'm already I'm not like grandfathered in, but I'm in there. My main problem is just that it isn't. Like, they're still working out deals with Amazon and with Roku, so you can't get the HBO Max app on those streaming platform type things, which is very frustrating. Like, I can only access it on my laptop and on my phone. So, but yeah, if I didn't have it, I would subscribe to it. It seems like it's one of those things where it covers a lot of territory. And it seems of all of the places, it seems like it's very, very much worth the money.
And it's the most expensive one there is.
But again, I mean, between like all of the, you know, the Adult Swim stuff, all the Criterion films that are on there, the TCM stuff. I mean, like so many of the issues that I've had with Netflix and wherever else is that they don't have a lot of older films. And I feel like HBO Max has done a really good job of, you know, making sure that those are on there and you can find, you know, really good stuff. There's a ton of things that aren't, obviously, but
Jared, would you get it?
Probably not. Just because so much of the stuff I have, so much of the stuff I'd be most interested in, I already actually have physical copies of, which is part of the reason why I've just never felt the pull to get as many of the streaming services as possible, because I already like have a lot of physical copies of this stuff.
Yeah. So.
Is there one that you say you must have?
Maybe at this point, Amazon Prime, just because the movie selection on there is pretty good, especially for finding kind of like off the beaten path stuff, I feel like.
Yeah.
Sounds good. What movies then did you like on HBO Max? Which ones were like hot for you?
Well, I'm going to jump in because Bruce, you were talking about comedies and one of my picks was A Fish Called Wanda.
Perfect.
Which is so many things that I like all at once. It's a screwball comedy. It's a heist film. It is, I mean, just over the top ridiculousness. I mean, it's a small chunk of Monty Python are in there. And yeah, it's nonstop amazing. Kevin Kline, he won an Oscar for Fish Called Wanda. Am I correct? Or he wasn't
expected to win.
Yeah. And he is absolutely stellar in there. I mean, it's Yeah, Kevin Klein doing like that level of over the top comedy is just absolutely incredible. That was the one on my list, and that is available on HBO Now and HBO Max. So,
a movie so funny that it actually killed a man. Which that's like one of my favorite little like movie stories. That there's like some Danish guy that was watching that movie and his heart rate rose too high from like laughing at a scene and he died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's a good one when we go, right?
Right.
That's a pretty good claim to fame to have as a comedy in some ways. Even though it's terrible, it's also like this movie was so funny someone literally died laughing.
I died laughing. Right.
I will say the one thing, like looking like having done a little bit more research in prep for this, was the director Charles Crichton really seems like he had a pretty unnotable, you know, film career for the most part. It's a lot of like weird genre stuff. And then he was doing these like what looks like, you know, weird Italian sci-fi films up to the early 80s. And then in 88 is when he had Fish Called Wanda. And the more that I dove into that, I want to do some more research into that. But so that's my first pick.
My first pick, not as happy go lucky by any stretch. And the first one I picked is Doubt from 2008, which post 2000, I don't think there are a lot of movies that are better acted than Doubt is. Mm-hmm. I've talked before about like casts that have an embarrassment of riches, and the cast for Doubt is definitely that. You've got Philip Seymour Hoffman, Amy Adams, Meryl Streep, and Viola Davis either at or close to their peaks, particularly like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who I think probably only had like one or two better performances than he does in Doubt. And whether or not he did what he's accused of in the movie almost doesn't matter. What matters, ends up mattering more, is that he plays such a like compassionate character that you don't want to believe that he did what he's accused of. And I think that's a pretty hard thing to pull off, but Philip Seymour Hoffman definitely puts it off in Doubt.
No, that's a good movie. That's a good movie. Okay, I'm going to throw you a series. The Not Too Late Show with Elmo.
Okay.
And what it basically is, it's like as if David Letterman were Elmo, and it has guests. The ones I watched had, I remember Jimmy Fallon and Casey Musgraves around there. It's a half hour, but it's kind of done like the old Muppet Show, where they're all really don't know what they're doing. They're all just running apart. And Elmo is pretty good. Elmo is a pretty good interviewer. It seems like it's pitched at kids, but I found enough in there to watch. And it really was fun to see him make fun of Jimmy Fallon.
Sure.
So I enjoyed that part of it. But Elmo's show, not that bad.
Is it something that is actually recorded and presented like the day of? Or is it... It's
no, because it's there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff where you see Elmo's family and you see Elmo has to get ready for bed and Elmo has to do this. So it's like, yeah, it's a lot of stuff that before you even get to the show itself.
Huh.
Cookie,
all right.
Cookie is his sidekick, and Cookie is always, he's very funny. Cookie Monster has a lot of good stuff to do, and they do dancing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's good.
Just hearing the phrase, Elmo's a pretty good interviewer, is going to stick with me.
He's good. He's better than Jimmy Fallon, so there you go.
Well,
that's a low bar, though.
Exactly. I was going to say.
You haven't lived until you've seen Cookie do the Cookie Shuffle. He's very good at dancing. And Casey Musgraves sings Rubber Ducky, so that's kind of fun.
Chris was talking about Adult Swim stuff. This would be a good tonic to watching a couple episodes of the Eric Andre Show.
There you go.
Just have something nice and relaxed with Elmo.
That might be my go-to-bed show.
Nice. Yeah, so my next one is one that is available only, or as far as I know, it's streaming only on HBO Max right now, and that is Point Blank from 1967. I picked that one because I have actually, I've been reading a bunch of old like noir, kind of like hardboiled crime books, and I just recently stumbled onto some Donald E. Westlake stuff, which is he was one of the screenwriters for this, and yeah, it is just a hard-boiled crew. Lee Marvin is the star. Angie Dickinson is in there. John Borman directed it, so it's got this kind of like almost psychedelic flair to it. It's double crosses, murders, you know, wonderful intense, you know, criminal intrigue. And yeah, very, very, very good movie.
Did they remake it?
I don't know.
I was going to say, this is absolutely one that I hadn't heard of before, and I'm now going to have to seek out, because basically everything you said in there appeals to me, Chris.
Recently, like just the other day, I've polished off Donald Westlake's book, The Hot Rock, which is about like these guys that have to keep stealing the same emerald over and over and over again. And it's very comical. But that was made into a movie starring Robert Redford, and that isn't streaming anywhere. And it is so frustrating because I want to see it so bad. and I just want it to be out there. So Point Blank is, I'm going to throw that one out because I can't say The Hot Rock.
And it looks like The Hot Rock was directed by my buddy Peter Yates, who did Bullet and The Friends of Eddie Coyle. So that sounds like a winner as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. The next one that I had is Watt Stacks from 1973.
Excellent.
Is on HBO Max. And Watt Stacks is a concert movie that should be as watched as like Stop Making Sense or The Last Waltz. But unlike those two, Watt Stacks is definitely about more than just music. I mean, guest list wise, there's Isaac Hayes and Albert King for like your music interest, but like Jesse Jackson also is in there reciting I Am Somebody, and Richard Pryor's in there too. And Watt Stacks is very much like a music film and a film about black pain and black triumph and, you know, community. And you know, the soundtrack does kick absolute ass too. So there's a lot to love and appreciate about a concert film that definitely is pretty underseen, I think.
Ready for another series?
Bring it.
Yes.
Legendary, which premiered not too long ago. It's Pose. If you watch the TV show Pose on FX, it's those ball kind of competitions. And it's half RuPaul's Drag Race, half Pose, where you see a little bit behind the scenes, and then you see them all come out and kind of do their little strutting and dancing and things. And then there's a panel of judges who I only knew one of them will say, you really brought it, or, you know, it's kind of like J-Lo and Derek Hough talking about how well they danced or what they do, or you were very sluggish, you could be better next time. And, you know, it is what it is. You got to happen to like that. I don't think if you're not into that world, you're going to be attracted to that show.
Right.
So, Legendary.
Okay.
Great.
So, yeah, my next one, this is, I tried to minimize the number of Criterion selections, tried to keep it to just one.
Yeah, that's what I did
because
as well.
Because you have that channel, that's why.
I do have that channel. And honestly, I mean, we'll see. I feel like I will probably watch more Criterion things through HBO Max than actually through the Criterion channel, maybe, as things progress. But we'll see. The one that I wanted to throw out there is Wise Blood from 1979, directed by John Huston. It is an adaptation of a book by Flannery O'Connor. So it's very, very Southern Gothic. It stars Brad Dourif as a kind of a preacher who starts the church without Christ. And yeah, it's so wonderfully Southern, and it feels like just this really twisted hangout movie in a way that is loaded with all of the, you know, Southern, you know, blood and guts, kind of a Christianity, you know, big tent revival vibes, but all of the, you know, repressed guilt that goes along with that. And yeah, it feels wonderful to watch it in a way. I mean, it's also, it's kind of a bummer in a lot of ways, but, yeah, it feels like a sitcom, you know, in the way that like an episode of Seinfeld would have, you know, A, B, C plots. And this has kind of the same thing, but it's, like, I could totally see this being adapted into a whole series, you know, directed by, like, the Coen brothers or something, and it would just work absolutely perfectly.
Right.
But, yeah, Brad Dourif. Yeah, it's Harry Dean Stanton in a small-ish role. Ned Beatty steals the show as well in another kind of little bit role. But, yeah, that's my my next one.
You had me at Harry Dean Stanton and also... And just weird Southern stuff. Because some of the stuff that I loved most in like the first season of like True Detective was like some of the tent revival stuff that they stumble into and whatnot. So like anytime you can have that particular slice of like weird Southern life, I'm always like inclined to
pay attention. Well, John Huston actually plays Brad Dourif's father in these flashback sequences, and John Huston is like the guy running like the big tent revival scenes, which is he was such an outsized personality, and it's all right there for you. So you'll dig it.
My next one is like my lone comedy, and even so, it's not entirely a comedy, but I picked Blindspotting from 2018. Which is one of my favorite movies from that year. Daveed Diggs and Rafael Casal have like incredible chemistry in Blindspotting, which pairs perfectly from another movie from 2018 that's also in the Bay Area, which is Sorry to Bother You. And that one gets into, you know, race and class and economics, but more through the lens of like sci-fi and satire, whereas Blindspotting, like I said, is more a comedy, specifically kind of like a buddy comedy, basically. And spiritually, it doesn't feel that different from like Friday or something even, but if it was set 20 years later in a neighborhood that's more gentrified, more police fortified, and yeah, it's just losing the shape of what it used to be.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that movie, and there's a lot to glom onto in there to talk about.
And I will absolutely second that. And the way that Blindspotting goes from comedy to very intense, like, you know, emotionally fraught scenarios masterful. It seems kind of like a hack thing to say, but nails the pitch and tone that it needs to be for what they're trying to accomplish.
How new do the movies get? Do they get 2019 films on the lists or not?
That's my newest one. Yeah.
So they're not like, for example, some of these other ones where you'll see something very soon on the HBO Max streaming service.
Well, I mean, it's anything that's on HBO. So I've got one from 2019 as well. So yeah, I mean, it'll be sometimes like new release type stuff when it comes out, as soon as like HBO would get access to it.
Good to know, because sometimes, you know, they get a little too old and you think, oh, please. So it's good to know there's fresh stuff there too.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know that Jared's going to be waiting for Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Who isn't? Who isn't, you know?
Release the Snyder Cut.
That'll be coming. That's on their list. You know, it's like that Friends reunion. That's right up there. It's going to happen. So don't miss it. Okay, another series for you.
Yes.
Love Life. And I hated it. Hated it. It's Anna Kendrick looking for love. And each episode, she falls for some guy, some different guy. And, you know, sometimes you just need to say to her, you're the problem. They're not the problem. You're the problem. And so it tries to be something that it shouldn't. And I've always believed they've given her too many chances. But it got renewed for a second season, so what do I know?
Wait, do you mean that Hollywood has given Anna Kendrick too many chances?
I think so. Yeah, I think a lot of these things she shouldn't be doing. She isn't the go-to actress that they think she is.
Man.
This is the spiciest hot take I think I've heard Bruce drop ever.
No, I like her. I like her in Given parts. The thing that she was in with George Clooney. And I think she got an Oscar nomination.
Oh, Up in the Air?
I love her in that. I thought she was really good.
Yeah.
But they have her as this kind of generic musical comedy star. And she does. And I like the thing that she did with Blake Lively.
A Simple Favor. Yeah, that's a great movie.
She's good in those. But then they put her in all these musicals. You know, it's like, no, you're not Into the Woods. You shouldn't be in that thing.
Yeah.
And I think they see her as another one like that is Amanda Seyfried. They think that she can do anything. I don't think they can necessarily. I think there should be kind of a lane for them. And they're fine when they're in the lane, but when they go off in these other things, it's like, oh, please. I don't know. But it's all about her trying to find love. And each episode is a different guy that she hooks up with. And the overarching narration says that you'll find two solid loves of your life in the course of your life. And you'll have seven. But they got 10 episodes. So I think there's a bunch of losers that are thrown in there just for good promise. But that's called Love Life.
All right. My next one is another kind of little off the beaten path. a lot of people saw Dick Tracy from 1990 when it came out and have seen it when they were kids or whatever. And I would encourage everyone to go back and rewatch it because it is just the perfect, like, not even kitsch. I mean, it's like the color palettes are absolutely incredible. The costumes are amazing. The sets are gorgeous. The cast is an absolute murderer's row, regardless of how much, you know, makeup you put on, you know, Al Pacino and Dustin Hoffman. It's the exact right level of ridiculousness to sell it. And Warren Beatty just kind of grounds the whole thing by being a perfect straight man for it. And yeah, Madonna is just
okay. Madonna is okay.
Well, I mean, it's the, you know, she was exactly right for that role. You know, I mean, Breathless Mahoney, what a great character. yeah, completely. And the songs she sings in there are really good. I mean, it fit exactly what she needed in her career. It's not the greatest movie ever, but man, it is underrated and I love it so much.
You even get some, like, farther down the list, you get some, like, Mandy Patinkin and some Catherine O'Hara even. Yep. And some Dick Van Dyke. Like, yeah, that cast is all over the place.
It absolutely is, yeah.
I also have a Criterion movie on my list because I had to pick just one. And I also had to have a horror movie on my list somewhere. So I figured I'd combine the two and include a silent Dutch movie from 1932.
What?
Which is a Vampyr.
It would never be on my list.
Which I think is
never.
I think it's one of the better Criterion releases and one of the best pre-1960 horror films. There aren't a lot of movies that I've seen that feel as much like a fever dream as this one does. Because it has this intentionally like washed out look to it, and it's very low on dialogue or dialogue cards, and it has these shots in it that I don't know how the hell they pulled off in 1932 that are just incredible. It feels like a magic trick. And then the ending of the movie, which I don't want to spoil at all because this movie probably hasn't been seen that much, is genuinely horrifying and claustrophobic and just beautifully WTF. So I've seen that movie like probably half a dozen times now, and I love watching it every time. It's only 70 minutes, and it's just a total yeah. It's just a total fever dream of a movie. So that's Vampyr from 1932 is on there, thanks to the Criterion.
Awesome.
Okay, another series for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Looney Tune cartoons. They're good.
We're talking the original ones?
No, these are new ones they've made. Even though this is the where Elmer Fudd doesn't get a gun, you've heard about that.
Like, it's like a scythe, doesn't he? I mean, it's all these other ridiculous like weapons, which are still like almost like comically more brutal.
But you know, they get the look right. It looks very much like the 30s and 40s. The voices are very good. The guy who does Bugs Bunny sounds like what I thought Bugs Bunny sounded like. And Daffy's in there. They're all in there. And it's very visual, very, the ones I watched were very colorful and they had, you know, a point. So I thought, you know, these are all right. They're redoing those things. Okay. And I think when they start hitting some of the other stuff, they might be in good territory as long as they stick to the old classics as their inspiration. We saw Scoob, if you remember that, in the movie theaters or in the streaming theaters. And it didn't really capture Scooby-Doo like it should, but these do because they go back to the originals. And I think they'll work. But the ones I saw, I laughed. I thought they were funny.
Good.
Yeah, no, the comedy-wise, so many of those original Looney Tunes still hold up absolutely beautifully.
Well, speaking of comical violence, the next one that I've got is Ready or Not from last year. Which is over the top. I mean, it's the premise of it is absolutely insane, where you've got a woman who is marrying into the very rich family of this like board game founder from like how many hundreds of years ago, and then they end up having to play a game and it ends up being hide and seek. And I don't necessarily want to spoil anything else, but it's a really great spin to a degree on like the final girl horror trope, but much more of a thriller type thing. Samara Weaving, who plays the main character, is just really wonderful and capable of carrying the whole thing. It's great gore and, you know, really, it's a ton of fun.
There's a running gag with like the maids and the butlers and stuff in that movie that it like makes me laugh every time it happens to a different one of them.
Yep.
That movie is like basically a more comedic version of like You're Next in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that movie so much. And yeah, Ready or Not's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I feel like that's one that came and went way too fast from the theaters. And now that it's out there, people should definitely give it an eyeball, because I think it's got a lot of cult classic potential.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got those Clue vibes folded in there too. And just great, very broad horror comedy. Well, this one's definitely not like an unknown property by any means, but because it was an option because of HBO Max, I had to include, because it's my all-time favorite movie, so it almost felt like necessary to shout out for people to watch 2001 A Space Odyssey if ever given the chance, because I think it's the best movie ever made, and it's just a total joy to get lost in for 2+ hours or whatever it is. You can't do better than a lot of Stanley Kubrick movies, and that's certainly true of 2001 A Space Odyssey. I got a chance to see it in theaters like 2 years ago for like a 50th anniversary thing that they were doing, and was like damn happy to get to see it. I never mind watching that movie. So,
did you ever see the sequel?
2010?
No, I refuse to.
You might enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's Roy Scheider is like the main person.
Yeah.
It is what it is, right? But 2001 is a great one. It's one of those classics. Yeah, I picked one last movie, a real movie instead of a TV series, because there's a lot of crap things there. Craftopia, Happily Ever Avatar, a lot of reality shows that I don't want to see. The new ones, there are more coming. So it's not like we are giving up on HBO Max in terms of original content. But the movie I picked, and I'll tell you why, when it came out in theaters, I was too young to get into the movie. And so I was just dying to see it as a kid. I wanted to see it in the worst way. And it was rated in those days M, which meant you had to be mature to be able to get into it. Well, next door to it was, that Elsa the Lion. What's it called? Born Free. So I went to Born Free. And then I went to the bathroom and I slipped into this movie because I was determined to see it no matter what. But as a little kid, I never knew what the beginning was, so I didn't understand it. I just saw the good parts. And then I had to quickly come out and pretend like I had just loved Born Free because it was so good. Well, the movie, now I can finally see it in its entirety and not have to worry about somebody coming in on me and saying, "Hey, kid, get out of here." Was Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, nice.
And I'm so glad it's there, because I like the idea that I can see it as if I were that kid watching it for the first time and involving myself in all of it. When you read about the movie, all the trouble they had and how they said, "Oh, it's not going to work," and doing these things are just awful. And when you see it, it is so perfect and it's timeless. It looks like, yeah, this is how somebody should do something like that, because it does stand the test of time.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, directed Arthur Penn. Yeah, Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway. I mean, it is so violent for the time.
Yeah, but it was fascinating. And the music they used with it, all that kind of stuff, just really, really made it pop. And like I say, it's one of those ones you watch years later and you say, you know what? That thing holds up.
Absolutely.
Bruce, between that one and Badlands, if you had to pick just one, which one of those two would you pick?
Oh, don't make me pick, because there are reasons why I like other things, you know, but that it's just, I think because there was so much innovation in Bonnie and Clyde, that's why I liked it. Whereas the other one maybe plays out a little more typical.
Yeah.
Perhaps. But yeah, that's the stuff I'm looking for, is where somebody will turn it on his head and you go, wow, I didn't even think they'd do something like that. And maybe that's what we'll see, was maybe that Zack Snyder's Justice League is going to be like that. You never know.
You never do. Well, I guess on that note, I know you got to hit the road, Bruce. But
yes.
Yeah, we will be back in a week or two with more of this. Thanks, everybody. Bruce, where can people find you?
You can look for me at SiouxCityJournal.com or at Sue, S-I-O-U-X, Bruce, on Twitter. And I think it's also on Instagram like that as well.
Jared?
Two-Headed Boy 98 on every platform possible, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, all that good stuff. And I will be watching more Danish horror movies from the 30s.
Hold me back.
Yeah, and I'm. You can find me Totes Chris on Twitter. I think I'm Dude Bro Chris on Instagram. Various other places. There you go. So awesome. Thank you guys so much. And
see something good.
See something good. So that was our roundup of some of the off the beaten path content that you can find on HBO Max. Like I said at the top, you can find the links in the show notes that will take you to where you can stream those films and shows that we discussed. So click on through to find those. And while you're making with all that clicking, you can subscribe to the show on Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and, you know, wherever else you listen to podcasts. Also, it really helps us if you rate and review the show on the pod player of your choice, so hit us up over there and let us know what you think. The show is produced by myself, Bruce, and Jared, and I'm the one who records and edits it. As always, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it and are taking care of yourself out there. Until next time. Watch something good.